Yeah. The views and opinions expressed on the following program are not necessarily those of the staff and management of Salem Media of Hawaii.
Welcome to Generations Radio, where the focus is on our seniors and their families. We are here each Saturday afternoon from 5 until 6 p.m., bringing you resourceful information with our radio team of professionals in the field of aging. Stay with us for the next 1 hour as we explore different ways to make life more exciting and meaningful for our extraordinary seniors, right here on AM 690 The Answer. And now, here is our host and the publisher of Generations Magazine, Percy Ihara.
And welcome back to Generations Radio, and thank you for tuning in here. It is Saturday, and if not, maybe you will listen to us Sunday, or maybe you listen to us on our website, generations808.com. But we're here. It's the summertime. It's kind of hot. I don't know about you guys, but it's kind of hot for me. But anyway, as you guys have been reading, I mean, it's almost like the O.J. Simpson trial, just about, right? Coverage every day, news every day on all channels. But the Kealoha Puana trial is going on right now. Actually, is it finished right now? I'm not sure if it's actually finished.
I think they're doing the rebuttal witnesses today, and then they'll do final arguments or closing arguments next week.
So if you know our magazine and read our magazine religiously, or if you just read it for the first time, you'll find our attorney here, Scott McCool-Conney, one of our writers and partners in the magazine. You were actually from day one, I think. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, sure.
Thank you. I think we start 9th year, 10th year, something like that. Kind of crazy.
Been a while.
All these years, you know. Scott McCool-Conney, welcome to the show, Scott.
Thank you very much, Percy.
Yeah, you know, I always go to you because you've been trial work. You've seen different cases. You were involved with a big case with Queens several years ago. If you're okay, well, I just kind of get an update on that if you're able to. But yeah, with the Puana case, Kealoha, and then Princess Kuanakoa, these issues regarding incapacity, dementia, Alzheimer's, is such a big topic. And I've been saying this for actually several years now, that we got to wrap our heads around it, especially for the families. You know, I know there was a study recently done that they say 50% of all the people in Hawaii that actually have dementia, Alzheimer's, are documented, only 50%. And the figure from the Alzheimer's Association was 28,000 people. They said that's only 50% of the people. So that's just over 50,000 people that actually have the disease.
Wow.
And I think in the next 10 years, that number is going to double. Scary thought. I mean, and then as well, the state got a grant, or University of Hawaii got a grant, to actually go out and train the public and actually train nurse practitioners and doctors to educate them that they need to document their patients. Mm-hmm. And whether it's happening or not, I think more and more, but still I still hear stories from friends and family and other people that they're not doing it. So it's something that, from a legal standpoint, as we know now, is just a huge coming and here problem, don't you think?
Yeah, well, capacity is one of those kinds of issues. And part of the problem is they've figured out how to keep us going longer. They figured out how to keep our hearts going and our lungs going, but they haven't quite figured out how to keep our brains to keep up with the rest of us. So, as you say, there's a growing number of people that are going to be dealing with incapacity issues, that are going to be suffering from incapacity. And in part, it's because they keep us going longer, and they just can't keep our brains working to keep up with the rest of us.
Yeah, that's just a fact of life. I think that I've been saying this for a while. Once you reach the age of 85, it's nearly a 50% chance you're going to get some form of Alzheimer's dementia.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's a scary thought. That came out actually about 2 or 3 years ago, actually probably longer. I think it's like 49%. But with those numbers and we're all living longer, it's almost inevitable something's going to happen. Yeah.
Well, and I don't know about you, Percy, but I think we all sort of feel a diminished ability to do things over time. You get to 50 and some things slow down. You get to 60, some more things slow down, and that's just how it is.
Yeah. I mean, I'm 59 now, and I see it a little bit, but I got so much stuff on my plate. I'm always moving. I got my young son, and I'm very active with my sports on the side and my weekend warrior duties. You know,
mm-hmm.
But
which is all great stuff. That keeps everything clicking.
Yeah. So from a legal standpoint, because I've talked to attorneys with my reverse mortgage business during the daytime, and I've seen power attorneys come in, and I knew my client had dementia already, and I told the kids, you know, we need a power attorney and the full blown trust, and I see a new power attorney come in, and And it was like a year old. And I said, well, how can this be when the mom's been had dementia documented for 3 years?
Yeah.
You know? So I called the attorney up and said, well, you know, I didn't tell her I had a document. I said, by the way, this, you know, I thought she had dementia already. He goes, oh, no, I met with her for about 20 minutes. She seemed pretty good. And I won't tell you who the attorney was, but I said, you know what? You can't document that. You can document, but we've already documented that she has dementia.
Mm.
So this is actually invalid. So I think going forward, you really need to ask the family. But sometimes the family doesn't want to document that. They want to get around that.
Yeah. Well, it's a tricky thing. The law presumes we're all competent. It presumes we have capacity to sign documents, to get a reverse mortgage and whatever. And then the issue is, when do you cross the line into incapacity? When do you lose the ability to be legally responsible for your actions in that regard?
Is there a legal verbiage on that, or is a standard thought on that? Or does every attorney have a different gray line where you can push back the line here or there?
Well, in the Hawaii revised statutes, there are standards for when you can get a guardian appointed, when you can get a conservator appointed. And it's essentially when a person has lost the ability to make decisions for themselves, which in some ways is kind of a subjective determination.
Yeah,
I mean, a doctor can tell you that somebody's unconscious and they can't hear you. I mean, that's clearly incapacitated during that time. But most of us don't just become unconscious. Most of us sort of travel this vague line, and we go back and forth over the line over time until finally we're over the line. And when exactly we cross, the doctors can't even tell us. They can look back and say, well, here Scott was okay, but here it looks like maybe he wasn't. And then here he's definitely, you know, off the tracks. So it's a lot of times it's not really a precise determination. Right. That
never
can be
a precise date.
Yeah.
So ask me this. So I've dealt with a lot of attorneys, and because if there's a trust or a power of attorney involved with a client that comes in, or the daughter comes in and says, I want to apply for a mortgage for my mother. That power of attorney, do attorneys, when they do the power of attorney, and put it through, let's say you're working with an 80-year-old or 75-year-old or 85-year-old, and is there a certain process where you go through, or are you just assuming she's competent and she can sign the legal document?
Well, the starting point is that the person is competent. But if you become aware of things like the person's inability to have a conversation, then, you know, the attorney has to make a call. Are they going to do that document for the person or not? And, you know, sometimes it's a close call. I've met with a client who told me, this is what I want in my estate plan. And I say, okay, good. Now, could you tell me again what you want in your estate plan? And they said, no, what did I just tell you? I said, well, what do you want? And they tell me the exact same thing. And then I say, no, what did you just tell me? I don't remember. But if they can consistently tell me the exact same thing, I give them the benefit of the doubt in that circumstance. And especially if they're not doing anything really weird. Now, going out and getting a reverse mortgage isn't weird, but it can be kind of an extreme thing. It can really affect, you know, rights in property and like that.
So money's involved. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. So that's something that, you know, you really want to make sure the person is on their toes. They're, you know, got capacity galore. You want to make sure that they're not only aware that they're taking out a loan, but they can see the bigger picture. They can see how it impacts their estate. They can see that, you know, well, eventually this loan is going to need to get paid back. And what I'm doing essentially is I'm using up my equity. And if they can understand those kind of questions, then great.
Yeah.
But if they can't, even the attorney's got to be really careful and not necessarily just presume that his client is competent.
Yeah. Well, it goes with whether it's a reverse mortgage or a regular mortgage as well.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
The reverse mortgage, for the most part, they're all government HUD insured loans. So we have a certain procedure. And we actually have to record the power of attorney on title as well. Some attorneys have put in their specific situation where they use the funds for mom's care to age in place, renovate the house, things like that. But, you know, we don't require that. But if they want to do that, it's fine. But we definitely want to make sure that that person's a legal power attorney legally. Mm-hmm.
And the person who gave the power of attorney signed it at the time when they were competent.
Well, so, you know, these legal cases we see out in the public, even in private, you know, a lot of it, the onus right now I'm seeing is the title companies.
Mm-hmm.
Because a title company, whenever somebody applies for a refinance of a mortgage, they have to produce that long form trust, not the short form trust, right? Because the short form trust doesn't have all the guts of the trust. And if they're using power of attorney, they also have to submit the power of attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times, I'm not sure exactly, every title company is different. Maybe you know, we're 3 or 5 years older than that. They question that more?
Yeah, as a general rule, 5 years, a power of attorney that's 5 years old is probably no good for a lot of purposes. And it just depends on who you're dealing with. Some financial institutions don't like them more than a year old.
Right. So that's just something that we're seeing more. I don't know, in this particular case, where they found out that notary in that particular case was not actually a notary, not even a live person. That's amazing. Yeah. But it's just something that we're seeing so often. Is there anything that let's say I come into you and say, Scott, my mom's slowly losing capacity. She's there, like you said, can answer a few questions now. Maybe not 10 minutes from now, but 30 minutes from now, she could answer that same question. How does a family can protect themselves? Or let's say, hey, Scott, I want to protect you against my sister Leah here. I think she's going to want to eventually take over power of attorney. How do you handle that? Is there any general way or what you would do?
It's really case by case. It's really tough to say. And the circumstances are never exactly the same. But we have at times asked clients to go get a letter from their doctor concerning their capacity.
Yeah.
Because
that's what I always recommend.
Yeah. Because, I mean, we can do what we can do, but our starting point is presuming capacity. And then we're not experts in determining when a person has lost the ability to deal with their assets or make decisions. So, yeah, sometimes we do have clients talk with their doctors. And it's best if the doctor has been treating the person for a long time. So they can look back over 20 years, for example, and be able to say, well, yeah, Percy's not the same as he used to be, but he's not crossed the line yet based on the doctor's determination. And that's a good thing to have in your file is that letter from the doctor saying, no, Percy's fine. You don't have to worry about his capacity.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so difficult for families like that. And me not being an attorney, I refer them to people like yourself, but I've seen more civil cases with family members suing each other because they're seeing that we don't think Scott's taking good care of mom, you know. And now I don't think Scott should be the guardian anymore. I should be the guardian now. Is there any way for the family to maybe send a mediation first?
Well, that would be ideal. And in fact, the Mediation Center of the Pacific has a special program to do just that.
Kupuna Pono.
Yeah. And so if a family can agree to go talk to a mediator, that can solve a lot of problems. And there are professional mediators out there that do it not on a volunteer basis like at Mediation Center. But you can pay a professional mediator to help you work through that process. And it's money well spent. Families really should focus on that rather than going into court and fighting in court because that just makes things worse. It creates greater animosities, and it costs a lot of money.
Yeah, and they may, whether you solve it or not, they're probably not going to talk to their loved one ever again.
Yeah, it's pretty sad. I mean, sometimes there's a family divorce in effect over that kind of thing.
So one of the other things we've been seeing is that, like in the Kwananokoa case, now that one, they had a successor trustee and a different power of attorney. What was that situation?
All I know about the case is what I read in the paper.
Right.
But there was a trustee who apparently she wanted the switch. She wanted a different trustee. She lost faith in the original person. And then I think the issue was, well, did she have capacity to make that determination? So that was
the she wanted issue. To change. That's right. She wanted to change the successor trustee.
She wanted to change her trustee. But this is, again, this is based on the newspaper, whatever it says.
So what is the procedure if they want to change that?
Normally, if you decided you wanted to change your trustee, you just sign a new trust agreement. Easy. Mm-hmm. And one of the things about the Kawanana Koa case that's different from most people is because of the size of the estate, there's a lot of people who claim to have interest. And the court has sort of recognized that, yeah, maybe other people do have interests in the estate. People who've been beneficiaries in the past certainly have an interest in her estate plan not being changed to remove them. But that doesn't mean that she doesn't have the right to do that, assuming she's got the capacity to do that.
Yeah. One of the things I always tell people is that with the time you're signing legal documents, your doctor visit around that time, we don't have a specific date, but let's say the month or the beginning part of the year, have a doctor find out if they can submit a letter saying your mental capacity and your health, because it's really hard to find later on, 2 years, 3 years down the road, you know, when mom did come to the point where she's unable to make her own decisions. And what decisions is that? Yeah.
Yeah. And having the doctor weigh in is not a bad idea. Because at the very least, the doctor can do what they call a mini mental exam and just ask some basic questions, test memory, test comprehension. And depending on how you score on that test, it may indicate, well, you know, this person isn't 100%, but they're not that bad, versus, oh, this person, you know, needs further workup to determine just how bad they are.
Now, that's not something the attorneys do. That's something the doctor's office does, right?
Exactly.
Okay. So what are some of the tips? I know you do workshops, and we'll talk about it a little bit on. You do workshops every month at your office, right?
We do.
Mm-hmm. On what a trust is, what a power of attorney, your duties like that?
Yes.
So we'll talk about it a little bit later on. But what are some of the basic things to protect yourself against when you become incapacitated?
Well, plan ahead. Before you become incapacitated, while you're still in possession of your faculties, get your estate plan in place. Pick your substitute decision makers, your successor trustees, your people under your durable power of attorney, your healthcare agents, and make sure that those are folks that, you know, people have a hard time sometimes because they think, oh, you know, my dad would be the best person for the job, but he's, you know, how much older than me? And what I tell people is, well, pick the person who's going to be best tomorrow. If somebody has to step in and make decisions for you tomorrow, who do you feel most comfortable? And it may be your dad, who may be, you know, 30 years older than you. Mm-hmm. And 5 years from now, dad may not be your first choice. But for now, go ahead and name him, but then name backups. So that dad also has the option of saying, well, yeah, I mean, 5 years ago, I would have been happy to do this. But now, you know, I've got other things going and whatever.
Yeah.
So do it ahead of time. Get your estate plan in place. And that's something that's really hard to get people to do. I think I've told you before, we did a survey at the Bar Association and found out that 60% of the lawyers, at least that were part of this informal survey, didn't even have estate plans. They had nothing. Lawyers didn't have anything. What's the general public? You know, probably similar, if not
probably
worse.
A lot more than that. I would guesstimate, especially if they don't think they have a big enough estate. They wouldn't have a trust anyway. A lot of times we just spoke to some people over on the windward side of Pohainani, and I think only 60% of people had a trust or power of attorney.
Mm-hmm.
The other percent are looking at doing it very, very soon. That's why they came to the workshop. But it's just something I think people need to start planning ahead. And I mean, I love that what the paper is doing in news, because it's really making people realize, hey, I better do something.
And
do it quick, because you never know what can happen. But, you know, when it comes to who do you trust, that's another degree of difficulty.
That can be difficult. And we have clients who've told us, you know, I trust my spouse, but I don't have any kids. I don't have any sisters and brothers. And so beyond spouse, it's really hard to find either a fiduciary or just a substitute decision maker. That can be the case, yeah.
And what happens in that case?
If it's picking a trustee, there are, you know, there's a range of commercial trustees, and some of them are really reasonable. They charge by the hour as opposed to charging by the value of the trust assets. So there are, you know, some smaller trust companies that sort of fill the void for the clients who can't afford the big boys when it comes to, you know, a corporate fiduciary. So in that regard, there are options, but when it comes to healthcare agent, none of the banks are going to want to be your healthcare agent. They're not going to want to be your agent under your durable power of attorney.
Right.
So you got to find individuals who are willing and able to do that.
Yeah, I've actually got inquiries in the last probably month and a half regarding that. And also for people that can fill out their form for the long-term care insurance. Sometimes these insurance carriers will put you to the test and fill these forms out, and then they say, well, we need this, 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 and then you have to resubmit more documents or another doctor letter, and it can be very technical. And I had one recently from a big financial firm in downtown saying, do you know anybody can fill this form out? I said, I can't fill that form out. I don't think the attorney's going to fill the form out. Actually, if you're the agent, you need to fill it out. They said, no, we can't fill it out. I said, well, I referred them to two nonprofits that would do some financial paperwork and financial consultation. So that hopefully that'll work out for them. So when if you're listening to the show and you see terminology in the news, power attorney, and then you have a trustee of the trust, and then successor trustee. So successor trustee is somebody that stands in for the person that was the original trustee.
Right. So you actually create a separate entity, a separate legal thing called a trust. The person who's in charge of it is the trustee, and that if you create a revocable living trust, you're going to be the initial trustee
for, my own,
for yourself.
Or for vice versa for my wife.
And that's correct. And a lot of times husband and wife or spouses may. But they also may be co-trustees because it depends on how they see their finances.
Right.
If their finances are ours as opposed to his and hers,
yeah.
Then they can both be trustees so that if one stops being trustee for whatever reason, it's perfectly seamless. The other person just steps in and they can do whatever needs to be done.
So once in a while we see this, and I hope, and I try to tell them, maybe we want to change that. The successor trustee, because if Scott, you become incapacitated, your successor trustee is your favorite son or your most loyal son. But now we have the power of attorney and it's another person. It's my favorite daughter. And if they don't agree, couldn't that cause a problem?
Well, it could, and it depends on what the trust agreement says as far as who has power to do what. I mean, you can say in your trust agreement, I want my agent under my power of attorney to be able to amend my trust.
The
person that you name in your power of attorney, the person to whom you give power of attorney.
Right.
Attorney, by the way, in this circumstance, doesn't mean a lawyer. It means someone who acts on your behalf.
Right.
Yeah.
And so... I just thought of a question and it slipped out of my mind. So I get this question quite a bit. Husband and wife still around. Dad passed away and the property's in a trust and she's not a successor. She's not a trustee remaining. Can she change that trust?
It depends. If dad gave her the power to do that, dad may have given her a power of appointment, which says, hey, honey, when you go, you get to say what happens to the trust. So, in effect, surviving spouse can rewrite the trust by saying that it's going to go somewhere other than the normal default. Normal default would be it just goes in equal shares to the kids. But there could be really good reasons for it not to go in equal shares to the kids, having nothing to do with whether they're good kids or bad kids. It could have to do with, you know, just their financial situation or whatever it is. And so it's not a bad planning idea to give spouse the ability to sort of rethink the estate plan and improve upon it.
Yeah, that question just came up in the workshop yesterday because they're wanting to, because I asked the lady, said, so will your daughter be taking care of you? Because she goes, yeah, she lives here. My two boys live on the mainland. So I said, is your daughter going to get the house? She said, no, we're going to split it three ways. I said, does your daughter know that? Because she might be a little upset when the brothers never come back help take care of mom when I really wanted the house. And by that time, she was incapacitated. So she couldn't change the trust.
Mm.
So she said, what do I do? I said, well, but sometimes, and the other couple said, yeah, let's say I pass away. Can my wife change our trust? I said, like you said, if in the trust says they can, they can.
Mm-hmm.
And so they gave me kind of a blank look and said, well, talk to your attorney.
Yes.
Because that's absolutely really important.
Yes.
We're seeing quite a bit of that. So anyway, we're here with Scott Mukuakani from Estate Planning.
Council.
And we're talking about incapacity, power of attorneys, trust, with the big media stories we're seeing in the news nowadays. I thought it'd be a good idea to kind of go through this and get an expert here with like Scott to really inform you guys how to handle things. So anyway, we're going to take a short break and we'll be right back.
When you feel like Vegas, There's just one place to stay.
There's a party at the Cow.
Grab a drink at the Holo Holo Bar. There's just one place to play.
There's a party at the Cow.
We got a fresh hot look, a new sports book. We got those local meals, just like Auntie cooked. Aloha spoken here.
Bet you find it at the Cow.
Check out the Cow's new renovated look and see why the Cow is Hawaii's favorite place in Vegas to stay and play.
Have you been looking for a safe anti-inflammatory for your health and longevity? Introducing Xanthosin, a doctor-recommended astaxanthin supplement that supports your joints, heart, liver, and longevity. Xanthosin is safe, pure, and specially formulated for superior absorption. Xanthosin complies with all FDA regulations for manufacturing and labeling. Xanthosin, the safe anti-inflammatory for health and longevity. Available at a GNC store near you.
If you're new to Medicare, we can help you work your way through all the questions, the details, and the headaches. Generations TV has gathered experts in the field to help you find the answers. This is Navigating Medicare.
A very important period is coming up, what we call AEP, Annual Election Period, from October 15 to December 7.
The annual election period is when you can change from one plan to another. The plans change. The benefits, coverage, and premiums may be different. So know what you should have. What are your current health needs, your budget, and priorities? You need to make sure the medications you are currently taking are covered and that your doctor is in the network you're looking at.
Like we mentioned before, all plans are different. There's no one plan that's good for everybody. Everybody got different wants and needs. Call us and we can help you.
Helping you work your way through the confusion. Navigating Medicare. Brought to you today by Financial Benefits Insurance, serving the entire state of Hawaii from the corner of Pi'ikoi and Kapi'olani in Honolulu.
Did you know residential care homes offer a family-oriented atmosphere? At Caregivers Heart Hawaii, our kupuna become part of the family. The smaller environment allows for more personal attention. For example, there's no waiting to go to the bathroom compared to other long-term care options. The patient-to-caregiver ratio is smaller and help is faster. Over time, residential care homes are less expensive compared to other long-term care options. Our caregivers are experienced and enjoy what they do, and all homes are ADA approved. Don't feel stressed and overwhelmed or try to do this alone. Aloha, I am Ku'unani Demonte with Caregivers Heart Hawaii. Let us help you with all your care home placement needs. Caregivers Heart Hawaii has knowledge and experience. For a free consultation and to learn more about us, go to caregivershearthawaii.com, where treating kupuna like family is our business.
Got Vegas on your mind? Get Vacations Hawaii on the line. Vacations Hawaii offers weekly 4 and 5 night Honolulu to Vegas packages, which include three meals daily from $6.99. Stay at Hawaii's favorite casinos, California, Fremont, Main Street Station, and Orleans Hotel. Vacations Hawaii will get you there in comfort on deluxe wide-body 767 planes with complimentary in-flight hot meal service. Vacations Hawaii's frequent flyer program gives you future travel discounts and credits. So if you're ready to win big, call Vacations Hawaii at 591-4777 or visit pointvacationshawaii.com.
Hi, I'm Margaret Wong with the Copeland Insurance Group. Let us be your Medicare resource throughout the year. We have agents throughout the islands to be of assistance to you. So if you have Medicare questions, we have the answers. Call us at 808-591-4877. Again, 808-591-4877. Thank you. We look forward to hearing from you.
Today, more than ever, we local people are living longer than any other state in the union, with more seniors, baby boomers, and caregivers. Generations Radio promotes the importance to be proactive as we all age. The radio team will focus on issues facing our seniors and their families, finding resources to navigate healthy aging along with financial, legal, and caregiving information. So join Percy E. Hauer from 5 until 6 each Saturday, right here on AM 690, The Answer. Focusing on the issues facing our seniors and their families today. Here's our Generations Radio host, Percy Ihara.
So welcome back to Generations Radio. We're here with Scott Mukuakani. We're talking about the legal issues regarding dementia and incapacity. But before we get to that, I did want to, you know, the June, July issue is out. Generations Magazine is out. Thanks to the IE family from City Mill talking about what they've been doing. And they do hire a lot of seniors. And, you know, I go there for great service. But also on page 10 and 11, there's the spread of our 13th annual Aging in Place workshop. Saturday, August 17th from 8:30 to 2:30 at the Alamon Hotel. No reservations required. There's a lot of parking in the area. So don't call me and say, just show up. Basically, once the room is full, it's full. So it's first come, first serve. Come early or come like 10:30, 11 and stay the afternoon, because the afternoon is a little bit slower than the morning. Every room is pretty full. And if you really want to have really good dialogue and presentations from experts in the field, we cover all things like Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, long-term care financing. I'll do the reverse mortgage section. We have many people on financial, decluttering, Medicare, as I said, counseling families on all such a sort of things. We have a lot of resources there. We'll get nearly 70 exhibitors, that experts in the field that are very trusted that'll be there. You can pick up information. Kaiser's going to be doing hearing loss and aging. We talk about dementia, as always, Dr. Ida Nguyen. One of my favorite products that I take is Xanthosin for anti-inflammatory issues. Eileen Phyllis from Attention Plus will be talking about the common questions about caregiving, which is, you know, really, how do you interview that caregiver? How do you set them up? How do you work with them, communicate with them? So it's really, really a great workshop. Our 13th year doing it. So we'll see you there at the Alamon Hotel. Come early or come a little bit in the afternoon, because it will be very, very full. So anyway, thanks very much to everybody, our sponsors here. It's in a magazine that's going to be there all day long. It's going to be a great day. It's a long day for me, but that's okay. Anyway, yeah, check out the issue. As you know, you can read it online as well at generations808.com. And all our past issues, what was it? We started in 2010. We're at 2019 now. So it's been a long, great journey, and we're continuing to go on. And it will always remain a free magazine. So check it out, though. Anyway, here with Attorney Scott McCulloch-Connie. So, Scott, yeah, you know, during the break, we'll talk about Medicaid, but we'll talk about that a little bit later on. But in terms of, like, power of attorneys, does somebody have to get, like, a general power of attorney, or what they call durable power of attorney, or do they need specific power of attorneys?
Well, for general estate planning purposes, we do what we call general durable powers of attorney. Now, durable just refers to, is it good even if the person becomes incapacitated? If a person dies, their power of attorney goes away, no matter
right,
what.
Right.
But the issue is, if the person becomes incapacitated, does the power of attorney stop being effectual? Now, it used to be the default under Hawaii law that a power of attorney was not durable unless it specifically said so. By statute, we've now changed that presumption. So you have to say it's not durable in order to make it not durable. So you sign a power of attorney today, it's good today. Assuming you don't say in the power of attorney that this is only good upon my incapacity. And you can do that in your power of attorney if you want to. The problem with that, though, is you raise sort of an issue with anybody using the power of attorney. First, they have to prove you're incapacitated before right. they can use it. And in an emergency, that could be a problem. So generally, what we counsel people is to think about who they would trust no matter what. Name those people in your power of attorney so that they're not going to go do things with your assets that you don't want them doing behind your back.
Yeah, I'll give you an example. Well, we recently had a case where they couldn't find a power of attorney, a copy of it. What happens?
Well, you're going to need to show the power of attorney to whoever you want to act, you know. If you're going to the bank and you're trying to get a loan for somebody else, the bank's not going to say, okay, well, if you say you have a power of attorney, that's good enough for us. They're going to need to see the document.
But no, I don't think it's law, but I've heard that most active attorneys keep copies, and you can go to your attorney to get a copy of the power of attorney.
You can. What we do is we scan everything that we do. So at least in theory, there is a...
But there's no law that your attorney has to do?
No.
Okay. But if you have a scanned copy, it's not an original.
For most purposes, a scanned copy is just as good as an original. And you can say so in your power of attorney if you want.
Really? You can say that in your power of attorney?
Yes.
Because for, like, I had a recent case, we used a power of attorney. I believe it's, there's land court and regular system recording system here. I believe land court requires original, regular system does not. Is that correct? Or vice versa?
It probably land court would require the original. With regular system, you can record just about anything.
Yes. Okay. So it must be land. And it, land court is usually areas that are older subdivisions, what I understand. Is that true?
It's a general, okay. Yes and no. I mean, land court registration is an extra step in land ownership. And there was a time when it was, I guess, pretty fashionable to make sure that your property was registered in the land court. So a lot of times, you know, sort of the nicer and maybe the older residential areas are land court. There are projects, condo projects, that are both land court and regular system because they were built over, you know, multiple parcels of land. This one is regular system. This one's land court. This one's regular system. You still got to record in both places.
Okay. So I'm asking a question that I'm thinking my clients would ask you is that, so do you need more than one original power of attorney?
We don't have our clients sign more than one original. Oh. Used to be the case we had them sign multiple and people would, you know, feel like they were, you know, mortgaging their house or something when they right. came in to sign documents because they'd have to sign so many things. We try and minimize that. And like I said, for most purposes, a digital copy is just as good as the original. So you don't necessarily have to have a ton of originals laying around.
Because when we do a mortgage, if it's in land court, like we just closed one last couple of weeks ago, because it was land court system, they had to provide the original power of attorney.
Right. But with land court, when you provide that original, you also give a copy. Land court keeps the copy. They give you back the original.
Yeah, they give it back.
So, yeah.
But they're worried about, am I really going to get it back? You know this government.
Yeah, you'll get it back.
Yeah. I told them you'll get it back, but don't blame me if
some,
you don't.
Some human could lose it, yeah. I suppose, but I've never had that problem.
Yeah, I have not either, but they're really nervous. Yeah. They only had one original. I say, well, I really can't tell you 100%, but it's not my thing, but the government... they'll get it back, but yeah. They're really nervous about
yeah.
that.
In all likelihood, they'll give it yeah. back. And it's just like when you go to the bank or whatever, they want to see a copy of the trust. You don't have to give them a copy. You say, you want a copy? Take a copy, but give me back my original.
Right. Oh, yeah. We never give them original on that. Okay. So one of the other things that we were talking about yesterday at our workshop is that we're finding a lot of people have the Advanced Healthcare Directive.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see that? Or do you always do that whenever you do an estate plan?
It's pretty typical. What we tell our clients, and we believe it, is that once you turn 18 in the state of Hawaii, you ought to have Advanced Healthcare Directive, Durable Power of Attorney, HIPAA authorization at a bare minimum. So every one of our clients, I can't think of any exceptions. Every one of our estate planning clients has at least those. Yeah.
Well, HIPAA, a lot of times the doctors won't have that. Make you feel,
you know, and a lot of times doctors will have other forms too. Doctors aren't the best lawyers. I'll just say that. And lawyers probably aren't the best yeah. doctors either. So if you want legal advice, you really ought to talk to somebody who has a legal background. Because there are a lot of forms out there in the community. There's a form in the Hawaii Revised Statutes of Advanced Healthcare Directive. And the statute says you don't have to follow this, but here's a suggested form. If you follow it, this will be valid. Problem with the form, though, is it's not crystal clear that if you appoint someone to be your agent at the beginning of the form, mm-hmm. and then later on you check the box that says, I don't want to be kept alive artificially, when you check that box, have you taken away your agent's authority to make decisions for you? And I think the risk is significant enough that I tell my clients, yeah, you probably did lose that person as your agent. Now you have a doctor who's going to be making the decision instead of the person that you handpicked to be making that decision for you. So I tell my clients, because a lot of them, they'll come and they say, well, Kaiser gave me this form or so-and-so right. gave me this form. And I tell them, well, unless you really know what you're doing with that form, don't use it. Make sure you talk with a lawyer and work with the lawyer in developing whatever kind of mm-hmm. advanced directive or whatever document you need.
So when you go through this process, do you tell them, go talk to your doctor about a pulse?
You know, POST is a document that I think is grossly oversold by the medical profession. I have clients who have POSTs that really shouldn't. The thing about the POST is, if I collapse in public, let's say, and I have an advance directive that says whatever it says. The paramedics don't care what my advance directive says. They're not going to read it. They're not going to care if I have one. The Pulse, on the other hand, because it's a doctor's order, they'll follow. Now, the default when the paramedics come is, well, they're going to revive you and they're going to keep you comfortable and they're going to get you to the hospital. There are some people who don't want those things to happen. Most of us kind of do want those things to happen. So unless you're real sure that, hey, if your heart stops, power it, you want to go, you don't need a Pulse. The kind of person who needs one is my late sister, who she had a Pulse because she had cancer that spread throughout her body, including into her bones. And if the paramedics had come and they tried to get her heart going through cardiac massage and whatever, if they got her heart going again, she would be in such bad shape that she said, no, if my heart stops, I'm gone. So if you've made that determination, then yes, Pulse is a great thing to have. But otherwise, you really don't need it, because the default, again, is they're going to keep you comfortable, they're going to revive you, and they're going to get you to hospital.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the biggest things that I see pushes out there. They're trying to get people to fill out the Pulse. It's like a greenish form, I think, they give out.
Well, yeah, that's kind of a convention to print it on this lime green paper. So because if you need it, like my sister, she needed it. So hers was on lime green paper. When she was at home, it was stuck to the fridge. When she was out, it was in her purse or somebody had it, you know. Mm. So, but Pulse is something I would say be really careful with.
Well, a lot of doctors are really being diligent about getting all their clients to.
But not every patient. I mean,
right?
Does every patient need Xanax?
Yeah. No, I get it. Okay. So what I've seen actually, you put us on a list of questions to discuss today. I have a couple cases right now where we have have the niece be the guardian, and they're going to hire a private conservator for their grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
Can you kind of explain what all that entails, like what a guardian does and the legal process in regards to why you need one versus a conservator?
Yeah. A guardian deals with personal things. It deals with your person. So if you have a guardian, that person is going to decide where you live, decide who your doctors are, make medical decisions for you and those kind of things. Conservator deals with your stuff. So the person who manages your assets would be the conservator. The person who manages your care and things like that would be the guardian. Now, you can, in your documentation, have a trustee or have a person with your durable power of attorney to do the stuff. And then you can have an advanced healthcare directive. And if you don't have an advanced healthcare directive and decisions have to be made, a court may need to step in and appoint a guardian. But that's where it comes on. Guardian is the person. Conservator is the stuff, the assets.
Yeah. And let's say, my experience is that they did not do any legal paperwork. Now dad's 9 years old, got Alzheimer's dementia. He didn't do any paperwork. Like you said, the 40% of the attorneys that don't have a trust and power of attorney.
No, it was 60.
Oh, 60.
It wasn't 40.
I thought it was around.
The majority.
60%.
Yeah.
Wow, I better go talk to these guys next time I see them next month. But yeah, you have to hire an attorney to petition a court for the guardian and conservator. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, in theory, you can do it yourself. But
you can.
Well, yeah. If you can represent yourself.
I got it. And so what exactly, so can they, like I have one right now, the conservator and the guardian are they have to apply together for the reverse mortgage. And they actually have a separate document to state that they're using the reverse mortgage for their care.
I wonder why the guardian is implicated in that.
Because guardians, somebody has to sign as an individual and somebody has to sign as the conservator. Like the power of attorney. And the mortgage document, if they were, we had one last month. The daughter was a power of attorney and also the successor trustee.
Mm-hmm.
So she had to sign as an individual and as a successor trustee.
Okay, that's a different thing.
Yeah.
That's a different thing between guardian and conservator.
Right.
Because it would seem to me that if it's getting a reverse mortgage, conservator would be the person you deal with. The guardian would be irrelevant, but maybe not.
There's a few documents she has to sign.
Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's been a long time since we rarely do see it. But it's not all the legal the guardian, the niece has to sign a few documents. But that's something that's a HUD requirement. And now we're seeing jumbo loans come into the marketplace today, and they kind of follow the same guidelines. just for structural purposes and how easy it was to set up that the reverse mortgage jumbo guidelines. But anyway, so let's talk about Medicaid. I'm hearing different things about Medicaid, and you had mentioned during our explained to our audience about when you want to apply for Medicaid, if your property is in a revocable or irrevocable trust, how does that work?
Yeah. Well, generally, you have to qualify for Medicaid.
Right.
Medicaid is a means-based benefit, not Medicare now, Medicaid.
Right.
Medicare, you turn 65, you get it. And there's other ways that you can get it. Medicaid, you have to qualify based on assets. So for Medicaid, you can own a house and still qualify because the house is an exempt asset. Now, if your house is in your revocable trust, the state will tell you, no, that's not going to work. And that's pretty much across the board, across the United States. Mm-hmm. You'll be told, sorry, you don't get the home exemption if it's in a trust. Take it out of the trust and you get the home exemption. Now, there's also exemptions for assets. So if one spouse is going into the nursing home, the other spouse is well, you know, they don't need it. That person can have $120,000+ worth of assets. If those are in a trust, that's typically okay. But you were telling me that there are some people who do Medicaid applications who've had the experience of being told, hey, if there's a trust involved at all, get out of here. We're not even going to take the application.
Or irrevocable.
Huh.
And that's, I've heard that probably within the last year.
Yeah, that's pretty extreme.
I think that's coming down from the state.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a federal mandate.
No. And sometimes when you're dealing with the state, it really depends on what individual you're dealing with. Because there's different levels of expertise even within the Medicaid office. And some may have one understanding and some may have a different understanding. I think they try to be consistent. But sometimes it's the luck of the draw, you know, with who you're working with. And sometimes the only way to get a remedy is to appeal. And sometimes you got to sue the state in order to get the state to do their job. But it's a lot easier, obviously, if you just satisfy whatever the rules are and your application goes through.
So one of our clients wanted to get a reverse mortgage. They went to the bank and they couldn't get a home equity line, but their property wasn't in an irrevocable trust.
Mm.
There are some situations that you can't unravel that irrevocable trust.
Well, irrevocable means you can't revoke it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that can be a problem. And very few lenders will touch irrevocable trusts.
Yeah. But it is possible, let's say I came to you and say, Scott, my attorney passed away. He put my mom's property in an irrevocable trust. We need to get it out because we need to apply for a mortgage or Medicaid or whatever.
Well, it depends. And there's ways to build sort of trapdoors into the trust agreement that, you know, maybe you can use in order to accomplish certain goals. So, but the trick is to make sure that those things are built into the trust agreement at the beginning. You can't add them later on. You can't change an irrevocable trust, but you can build in a lot of flexibility at the front end.
Yeah, but do you see many families doing that? I mean, for planning purposes, or maybe it's been divorced or second marriages involved?
Doing irrevocable trusts? Irrevocable trusts are a lot more rare, I would say, than revocable. In part because they are irrevocable. You can't undo them, but they have, you know, their own specific uses. It's kind of like the tools in your tool chest. You don't use a wrench for everything, and a trust is a tool. So there are irrevocable trusts that you use for certain purposes. There's revocable trusts that you use for certain purposes. And there's nothing to say you can't have revocable and irrevocable trusts as part of your estate plan. You can have more than one trust.
We're here with Scott McCool-Connie from Estate Planning Council, one of our longtime, actually original writers for the magazine sponsor, and I appreciate that, Scott. Now, I want to give, so for a lot of people that we're finding, because of all these legal battles in the newspaper and the public, they really need to sit down and really look at their estate, and they haven't done a trust yet. What are some of the steps that you guys do, what they should be doing? Should they just hire an attorney and then do a trust? Or like, what I like what you do is you have meetings every month to explain that. So walk us through. Let's say I come to Scott's like, Scott, I'm looking at my parents. They need to get a trust. What do we do from here?
Okay. So our process is we start by inviting the prospective trust maker to a workshop to learn just the basics of what a trust is. Mm-hmm. How does it work? What decisions need to be made in the planning process to create the trust? And we don't charge for those workshops. And anybody who comes to one of our workshops will sit down and at no charge, we'll listen to their story. We'll have them fill out information forms that tell us what they own and things like that. And then based on that meeting, after about an hour, we can tell them, well, this is what we would suggest for you. And if the clients want to go forward, great, they can go forward. If they don't have to. But we don't charge anything up to that point. Now, sometimes folks call us and they don't want to come to a workshop. They just want to sit down and talk to us. Mm-hmm. We charge for those meetings. Those aren't free meetings. The free part is the workshop and then that follow-up meeting. But as long as people want to go through our process, we think it's a good process. Well, we think it's very helpful. Too. And so that's why we encourage people to, you know, just come to the free workshop, have free meeting, and then decide what you want to do.
Yeah, I recommend everybody do that because you need to understand what your duties are as a power of attorney or a successor trustee. Let me ask you this then. Let's say Scott, my dad passed away. My mom did not do a trust. Dad said no need. Now, I'm one of six kids. But I live with mom. I want to bring my mom in. How do you handle that? I mean, do you just sit the mom first or you sit with the kids or invite all or none of the kids or three of the kids? How do you handle that? Because I've seen it a lot. It's like, wow, man, that's not me to say.
Well, yeah, probably what the lawyer would want to do is sit down and talk with just mom without Percy in the room or without any of the kids in the room. Right. Now, if mom says, but I want kids in the room too, that's fine, but the lawyer still has to have that private conversation with mom to get real clear as to what mom's wishes are, because the whole goal is to carry out mom's wishes, not the kids' wishes.
Yeah, and we see that so often, you know, when they change a power of attorney, now person who's taking care of mom, he gets the whole property himself? Wow, it's amazing. How did that happen?
You know? Well, and people change their minds. I mean, people have a right to do that.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, it's just how did it happen when I thought we were all supposed to share it, you know? But we see this so much more, and it's just something I wish. That's why we do it. Thank you for coming on, because it's just something we wanted to get out there and be ahead of the ball a little bit. That's why I'm thankful for the paper and the news station putting that out there, as dirty as it is, but we really need to take a proactive approach with our own families, don't you think?
Yeah, and the big issue can be communication. So if mom does change her mind and says, no, I definitely want the house to go to Percy because he's the one who's been taking care of me. If that's communicated to everybody, it's not a surprise when mom goes, it goes down much better.
That's the key, is that you let the family members know, your brothers and sisters know, because, yeah, if you keep it a secret and when you open up, how does Scott get the property?
He's
not even living here. He lives in the manor.
Exactly.
He's the richest guy. He doesn't need that property. But we've seen this time and time again. I had a good friend of mine call me up and say, hey, you know, me and my sister took care of mom and dad for, as you know, 8 years, and it was very difficult. But my one sister on the mainland didn't come back. So she called me and said, I want my one-third. So my friend called me and said, yeah, she wants her one-third. I said, she's right. If that's what the document says, then that's the way it is.
Yeah, that's right.
And I told her, remember about 8 years ago when you first took this task on that, you know, probably a long battle that you should change the trust? He goes, yeah, but dad didn't want to do it. What can you do?
Yeah.
You know? So, but thank you so much, Scott. I mean, it's just great working with you. Thank you for all your years of partnership. And so give us our contact info, your info, and how we get a hold of you and how we go to your workshop, your website, things like that.
Okay, the best way to get in touch with us is through our website, www.estateplanning.com. Estate planning is spelled weird. It's EST, the numeral 8, PLANNING.com. And you can find information on how to get in touch with us, how to sign up for a workshop. You can actually sign up for a workshop on the website. And that's, you know, really the easiest way.
Otherwise, what the office phone number, because I know people are going to call me. What? He didn't give me the phone number.
Okay. It's 587-8227.
Great. Yeah, no, we do get that. I Google everything on my phone.
Yeah.
I do a lot of my banking on my phone today.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty safe. But thanks so much, Scott. I appreciate it. You know, you're one of the big experts on this issue, and I appreciate your time. So thank you.
Percy, thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
So give Scott a call if you need some help or if you have some questions or just want to go to a free workshop. So thanks, everybody. Have a great weekend. Don't forget our August 17th, 13th Annual Aging in Place Workshop. is coming up, so check it out. Anyway, everybody, have a great weekend. As always, aloha and live well.